The Holy Gospel according to Luke, the 14th chapter. Now, large crowds were traveling with Jesus, and he turned and said to them, "Whoever comes to me and does not hate father and mother, spouse and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and even life itself, cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not carry the cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. For which of you, intending to build a tower, does not first sit down and estimate the cost, to see whether there is enough to complete it? Otherwise, when a foundation has been laid and the builder is not able to finish the building, all who see it will begin to ridicule the builder, saying, 'This person began to build and was not able to finish.' Or what king, going out to wage war against another king, will not sit down first and consider whether he is able with 10,000 to oppose the one who comes against him with 20,000? If he cannot, then, while the other is still far away, he sends a delegation and asks for the terms of peace. So therefore, none of you can become my disciple if you do not give up all of your possessions." The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Christ.
I remember a couple times while being a camp counselor or being a student employee at St. Olaf College or even as a nonprofit employee having what you would call team builder retreats. I'm sure many of you have been to one before. And always it seems one of the most ridiculous exercises we would end up doing is called many names, but the one that I know it by is the trust fall. This is where someone stands on a ledge, arms across their chest, and when they are ready, begin to fall backwards into a group who catch them, hopefully, and bring them back to a standing position. It's not my favorite team building exercise, and it's a very kind of weird sensation and actually probably pretty awkward to watch it if you've ever seen it. But in a silly way, this exercise, I think, gets us out of ourselves and requires, actually, us to put our trust in something beyond ourselves when we are falling backwards. Sometimes this is a very, very hard thing to do. And so our rather challenging gospel reading text today is Jesus, I think, setting up the parameters a little bit for a trust fall with God. It's all about asking the question, what does it mean to trust God and to follow Jesus Christ? Well, the problem with this text is that it's not your average laughing coworker gently catching you type of text as you fall backwards. This text is actually Jesus getting real and using some very, very tough language, which might seem abrasive to many of us. He says, "Whoever comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and even life itself cannot be my disciple." What on earth does that mean? Part of the answer, not all of it, but part of it, can be seen in historical context. Jesus is following many of his contemporary Greek philosophers of his time period and using an old Greek rhetoric technique called reductio ad absurdum, or using an almost, which means using an almost ridiculous or shocking claim to prove a point. His example of hating father and mother, building a tower with no plans, and a king going to war with no strategy are all extreme examples that point to a simple argument. There is a cost to totally trusting something beyond ourselves and being a disciple of Jesus Christ. And this can be a hard argument to hear in itself, because we're used to hearing, especially those of us who've grown up in the broader church, to hear the benefits of our trust fall with God, right? Benefits that include salvation and love and freedom and justice and maybe just a good feeling, right? But Jesus is shocking. Get down and dirty, lay it all out there. Point is that there is also something that we have to give up. There's a cost to this trust fall. Some things that we need to let go of. So what are those things? What does it mean to love the Lord your God with all your heart and mind and soul? Well, many of you might have heard of a method called the Montessori method. It's a theory of teaching children that was pioneered by Maria Montessori in the early 20th century. And there are multiple early childhood centers, actually, in Missoula that use this Montessori method type of teaching. And it has a proven track record for success in many ways. And I was looking online and seeing this overview of the Montessori theory of teaching kids. And this outline basically summarized what basic human needs and basic qualities of all children are, according to the Montessori method. And it read, quote, "All human beings are born with a tendency towards self-preservation, order and orientation, communication and imagination. In its list of basic human traits and analysis of children, its explanation showed that self-preservation was at the top almost every time. Self-preservation, fight or flight, as we know it, seems to be hardwired into all of us." Now, this fact isn't, by any stretch, all bad, I don't think. Self-preservation gets us up in the morning, right? It drives us to do well and to succeed. It helps us to look out for situations that could do us harm. But my question is, does self-preservation get in the way sometimes? Martin Luther had to face what many of us can only imagine or read about in history books. He dealt with a plague that was killing people, and no one knew why. Many of his theological contemporaries in the 15th century in Germany actually called the plague God's punishment, not surprisingly. In fact, we know that most of the people in Wittenberg, where Luther spent most of his life, actually fled from Wittenberg a couple times as the disease had waves that came and went with this town. Luther had his own struggles with whether he wanted to self-preserve himself, self-preservation, and to flee himself. And he writes about this struggle in Does He Stay or Does He Go? And he finally decides that he's going to stay. And he opened up his home, actually, for the sick. So it's a miracle that he didn't get the plague himself. But he writes, quote, "The call to love God and to serve my neighbor, I feel, has to come first." And this example, I think, though extreme, is what Jesus is getting at in our challenging text for today. What comes first? When this going gets rough and the outcome unknown, it's discipleship that needs to trump, no political pun intended, self-preservation. We can see many examples throughout history of people actually choosing discipleship, I think, over self-preservation. From getting a wounded soldier to safety, to leaving nobody behind on an expedition that goes haywire. Many people, when they are pushed to the brink, are able to trust something beyond themselves and to do incredible things. But there is a cost, I think. Yes, it could be one's earthly life in very, very extreme circumstances, but there's always a lot of factors in that, and I don't want to dwell on that in this sermon. Because for most of us, the costs will be much more ground level. Not enjoying something, perhaps, for ourselves so that we can give it to someone else. Or missing a meeting at work in order to care for someone who is sick or dying. Or thinking not just how much we can get, as much money as we can to retire as possible, but to think about what's actually enough for us to live on and to give the rest away. These costs, I think, seem trivial, right? They seem very easy to live out. But actually, they can be very, very hard to live out. It's an incredible challenge to say that we are willing to trust God. Sometimes trust God even before our own family. That is challenging. It's the cost of reordering life and love. Some of you are aware that my grandfather passed away this last year, and I loved my grandfather a lot. He was an incredible pastor who taught me a lot about faith. But sometimes I got a little bit frustrated with him, as many grandsons do. And I got frustrated with sometimes he had this generalistic language that many times referred to putting God first. I remember one conversation that I had with him before I went to college. And before I left, he said, "You know, Eric, just make sure now that you will be going to college and living on your own that you see Christ as first, because he will guide you." And I know that Grandpa Joe meant this with the best of intentions. But I could never quite figure out really how to just put Christ first. What does that mean? How do we reconcile this with our everyday life? I think sometimes we say these things not because we don't really know the costs involved or how to really do it, but just to comfort ourselves in the generalities of faith language. But lucky for us, Jesus, I think, has a little bit more of a specific direction for how to put God first. He's asked, "What is the greatest commandment?" I bet you all could maybe repeat after me. "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself." Remember, love your neighbor as yourself. I remember asking my mother as a little kid, "Do you love God more than me?" And my mom had a great, great answer to this. She said, "You know, it's because I love God so much that I can love you so much." And Martin Luther says the same thing in his struggles with the plague. He writes, quote, "I love my neighbor as an act stemming from loving and serving God." And I think that this is something helpful that I hope we can take with us today. Not just we leave today to say, okay, let's put Christ first. Well, how do you do that? Well, we can leave today by putting aside maybe a little of our self-preservation and loving our neighbor. These things are intimately linked, maybe more than what we think. So maybe we are able then this week to think, I hope, of our trust fall with God. a little bit more. May we know the costs of commitment towards the divine and putting the divine first in our lives. It's not easy or well-defined. But may we also have the comfort that loving God first means also mostly loving our neighbor and our earth first as ourselves. Sometimes self-preservation isn't what it's all supposed to be about. And maybe we can be granted, I hope, the wisdom and the courage and the patience to reach for something a little bit higher. Amen.